crouch, bind, set.
Joe presents the House of Rugby.
Hello, I'm here with the birthday boy himself, Sean O'Brien. Good to see you, Sean. But also none other than the World Player of the Year, Gloucester and Hartbury and England's Zoe Allcroft. Zoe, how good does that sound? World Player of the Year.
Still getting used to it, really.
Oh, well, first and foremost, congratulations from us. Yeah. Fully deserved and an unbelievable achievement. Just talk us through your year. I mean, how great was it, really, to get that accolade? But the whole year must have been amazing.
Yeah, it's been, like, amazing. Like, I think it's... Obviously, it's been quite a big year. Like, we were supposed to have the World Cup, and then it got postponed to this year. So just, like, keeping the concentration levels, that sort of thing. And then we had our autumns announced, and obviously we were playing New Zealand twice in a row, and then Canada and USA. So obviously, like, we knew it was going to be a big season. But, yeah, it's been amazing to, like, play those games and then get announced for the World Player after those games. Yeah, it was amazing.
And you brought the trophy along for us, which is fantastic. It's closest, and I said I'll be getting my hands on that. But where do you keep it at home? Is there somewhere like safe? You know, giving too many secrets away.
It's thrown in a room. I can see how much dirt is on it.
It's got a few fingerprints on it.
Tell us the truth.
It's just kept on the mantelpiece. But yeah, I feel like everyone like touches it when they come round, so it's just gathered in fingerprints.
Yeah, it's the best way.
At least it's not broken or dented.
That's
yet.
True. That's true.
That's what usually happens. Trophies and
yeah,
I mean, and the match awards. Have you ever got one?
Yeah, I have. They're always trashed at the end of the game. So it gets a change room, get lobbed around or something. But, yeah.
When I actually got given the award, they were like, "Oh, make sure you keep it safe or whatever." So, and it was just before training. I took it out onto the training pitch. I was driving home later that evening. I was like, "Oh my god, I've left the trophy on the pitch." I literally had to ring my coach to go down to the pitch to grab it. Yeah.
But anyways, birthday boy, how old are you, honestly?
What age?
You don't want me to guess.
35.
Is that true?
That's true.
Okay. And you said you didn't want to bring it up and everything. You wanted to keep it quiet.
Low
you don't
key.
Want to make, you don't,
very low key.
Low key,
very
but you
low
put
key.
Up 102 Instagram posts about it today.
I did.
So not that low key, is it?
I put up
it,
a
surely?
Few for my family.
Not all your
London
family.
Irish. That was it, really.
Okay. And did you do anything at the weekend?
We had a team social on Saturday evening. Which was good fun.
Prepping for Sarri's.
Oh, geez, there I am, look.
Ah, Shawnee.
Dressed as the Joker. We were in groups of six, and our team was Batman, so bit of crack, so it was good fun.
Can I just ask one thing? Yep. Whose house is that?
That's mine.
Because the state of that kitchen. What is going on, mate?
There's a lot going on there at the minute.
I'm about to say, I mean, there's clutter and there's just crap everywhere.
A very small kitchen table, now that is behind me.
I mean,
so yeah.
Well, anyways, happy birthday from everyone here. We do have a cake somewhere, but we'll get it out later. It's got some diggers on it, so it's especially made for you, as you know.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, it's been an unbelievable weekend of Six Nations Rugby.
Yeah.
And those who missed it last week, we had a musical rendition made for us. And we've got another one this week from Ollie Hume. So take it away, Ollie.
Scotland, Wales and Cardiff, where both teams knew the stakes were high. Wee Darcy Graham put his dancing shoes on to score himself a hell of a try. But Dan Bigger, with his knee hanging on by a thread, kicked a drop goal to put the poor old Scotties to bed. Nighttime in Paris, where Ireland put Les Bleus to the test. The French troops did not surrender, despite what history might suggest. Ireland's favourite Aussie winger scored the try of the day, but they were conquered by the flawless boot of Jaminet. In Rome on Sunday, the Azzurri had a tough afternoon. English fans will think they're back now, you can hear them all changing their tune. Marcus Smith, with the big old floppy boy band hairdo, brought the swagger and the skill that left the Romans feeling blue. Week two.
I mean,
not bad.
Chapeau to Ollie there. You know, I think that's just incredible. You know, he's done that in a couple of days' work, probably a few hours actually, because he's got a full time job. But amazing,
hopefully,
really.
Hopefully, not a few days. You'd expect it to be probably.
We'll give you a whole week, see if you can do better, shall we?
I'd actually be on for that challenge.
Okay, well, there's a challenge. We've heard it here. Zoe, you've heard that.
Yeah.
We'll make sure
as
we send you a clip.
As long as you join me.
No, that wasn't the deal. You've got a week. Cause you I said it was great and you thought he should do better.
I thought it was very good too.
You're backtracking
now.
I like
the tune.
Well, next week we expect something from you.
Okay, great.
Okay? And Ollie will be back in week three as well, so... Yeah. What did you think, Zoe? You like it?
Yeah, I liked that. Yeah, I'd like to see you do better.
Yeah. Well, moving
no pressure.
On. Yeah. But plenty to talk about in the Six Nations. Scotland versus Wales to start with, or Wales versus Scotland. Who impressed you most, Shawnee, in that game?
I thought there's a few standout performers for Wales. I thought Liam Williams is brilliant. I thought Bigger was good. I thought Wyn Jones is excellent. I think he was really, really up for the game. Basham, again, he's coming into his own. He's going to be a serious, serious player, I think. Thomas Williams was decent enough as well. They had a few big performances, and I thought they needed to have a few big performances, but on the flip side of that, Scotland were very poor, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I personally thought it was a massive opportunity for Scotland they missed, especially in that early, I think, 20 minutes or so. There was seemed to be, the Welsh defence were a bit all over the place, there was gaps everywhere, and I just felt like Scotland missed that opportunity. They could have really got on the front foot early, and their kicking game was better than Wales, but Wales just hung in there and hung in there, and then they just beat them up a bit, I felt, the Welsh. They wanted it a bit more, they stuck in there, their forwards really carried hard, they got on the front foot. It wasn't perfect by all means, but they just seemed to have a bit more energy, a bit more fight than the Scottish, to be honest. And I think, you know, they gave 13 penalties away, Scotland. I think that they'll be ruining that missed opportunity.
I think you're spot on, because they haven't backed up a big performance with another big performance in years. And I don't know what the messages were during the week, obviously. We're only like, it's all hearsay now, and we'll be guessing, but surely they would have talked about this, like about backing up a performance. And after 3.5 minutes into the game, I was like, just keep playing here. Scotland had Wales all over the place, and Wales were chasing shadows around the place. But then they kind of went off script a little bit, and then Wales are so good at staying in the fight, getting a turnover when, you know, when there's a bit of ascendancy, and they're dogging. And as you say, the difference on the weekend for me anyway was that Wales wanted it more than Scotland. And I don't know what Scotland have to do to get themselves to that place where they're actually consistent in their performances, because it's chalk and cheese from week to week at the minute with Scotland. And while they've class, they are class when they get it right. They weren't where they needed to be at the weekend against a Wales side who are desperate and at home.
In terms of like the Principality, the stadium was like rocking, the noise, Wales were up for it, as we said. You know, where have you played that you found that atmosphere, perhaps not intimidating, but like so vocal that you're like, well, blimey, this hits me. Anywhere in particular in any of the games for yourself?
A couple of years ago, we played in Clermont in France at that stadium, and like it was like amazing. I think it was like one of the biggest crowds I've actually played in front of, but they had like a massive brass band and stuff like that, and that was actually quite intimidating. But like the more the game went on, the more it was like actually quite good for us, and it was a really good atmosphere.
Because you would have played there as well. It's unbelievable.
I've played there a few times. It's funny, because when you do get there and like you hear this like the atmosphere before the game and stuff, it does kind of get like you're going, oh, this place is going to be rocking. The one thing you need to do in a stadium like that is silence the crowd initially, and then they actually typical French end up coming with you at some point.
That's exactly what happened.
And that's when the atmosphere gets class for you then as a player, like, and for the team. Very, very tough place to play in, though, especially with that crowd and brass band, and they're banging all those things off the chairs and everything. It's class.
Especially that era when they were, you know, flying, I think 2005 to 2015, 16, I think it was, maybe even 18. They're just unbelievable. It's like a stadium for me, Stade Marcel Michelin, it's like vertical, and it starts to shake a bit, and they start to get a rumble on, and you think, blimey, like they're not just coming into our 22, the whole crowd's about to storm. And it's actually quite an amazing feeling, though, as you said, if you can stand up to that and then, you know, fight fire with fire, it's brilliant, and that's why we play rugby. But I think the Welsh, it's like that for them. Whether they're playing badly or suffering, when it comes to it, the crowd are always behind them, and that did help them a lot in the game, do you think?
Yeah, no, 100%. I think, you know, it was one of my favourite places to play. It was Millennium Stadium, regardless of how you were going in the game, just the atmosphere is electric. And that's why I was kind of like thinking during the week, I was like, what has Scotland said? How had they prepared for this game, knowing what they're going into? Because as an international, you know exactly what you're going into there. It's going to be a war. And just at the end of the game as well, you could see what it meant to them. They know that they're not, Wales probably know that they haven't been playing the best rugby, but one result like that could change Wales' whole dynamic, because they're confidence players. And when their tails are up, they're very hard to stop. So I think you'll see a different Wales side now for the rest of the tournament.
Dan Bigger obviously got that drop goal, which won them the game effectively, but they had the penalty advantage in front of the sticks. As a player there, do you feel that you'd like to see your team have a go, whether it's a cross kick to Cuthbert or to someone, or a chip, or try something a bit more maybe, and even just take up a bit more time, because you know that you waste another minute playing and then you get a penalty anyways, it's taken longer.
So I said if she had the ball in her hands, she would have went for the drop goal as well earlier. But... I know, I thought, to be honest, I think with an advantage like that, you have a crack to try and score. I think just where he was, and when he got received the ball, he just had a quick look. He was like, I'm right in front here, I'll just peg it over. And it done the job for him. But if Scotland were firing on all cylinders, it mightn't have done the job for them. Mm. And that's where probably it's easy to look back now. But me personally, I probably would have went corner again or scrum, depending on how it was going, exactly where it was. And it was kind of nearly in the middle of the pitch. And have a right crack first and foremost. But when you have an advantage like that, in those tight games where there is going to be a score at the end of it, you know, it's obviously the correct decision now, but if they'd lost the game, everyone would be saying, oh, they should have, you know, had a crack, tried to score. If they didn't, come back for a penalty, kick into the corner and see can you get one then, see can you go for a seven.
Yeah. I'm not saying they should go for the corner. I just think, you know, you're going to get the three-pointer anyways. At least have a go and you come back and take the 3 points, and then you take up a bit more time, really. Because I suppose the drop goal just means that, bang, you're straight back and Scotland have got time to eke something out. But moving on to the Irish-French game over in France. I mean, what a contest, first and foremost. I don't know if you got a chance to see it, but it was just an unbelievable game for me. Shawnee, obviously, as an Irish supporter, fan, it was disappointing, but, you know, how impressed were you with the game?
Yeah, I was very impressed with the French side. I think Ireland obviously started a little bit slowly, I thought. They would have had done a lot of homework on the French side, and just getting done for that first try, the way they conceded, it was a soft enough score, just didn't fold quick enough, took the edge and back inside to our main man Dupont, you know, who was incredible all weekend in that game. He was phenomenal actually at times. But Ireland, it's a very hard place to go to in the first place, Stade de France, and get a result. But to go behind like Ireland did and come back into the game, I thought was a testament to the way they're trying to play the game. I know they got the Mac Hansen, you know, kickoff, and that was a piece of class by him just to catch it on their own and score, and they were straight back into the game. But
is that your try of the weekend? That bit of skill?
Probably, like at full tilt to grab, snatch the ball like that and away, which was incredible. But the most impressive thing I thought was the French power game. They were running around the corner and running at the Irish defence like crazy people. And they're so big, they're able to move, they're mobile, and they were breaking up the breakdown. So if there was an Irish man anywhere near the breakdown, he got hit. And that's what I thought. I think that's where Ireland suffered in that last part of the game, where they were just defending for a lot of time during the game, but also getting beat up a little bit. You know, the French are big, big men, and they came up wave after wave. Now, Ireland dug in and they played really well at times as well. But I just think near the end of the game, that told a little bit, I feel.
And so you've played against French teams before. You know, when they get a roll on their forwards, particularly their, you know, big men, big women, they get over the gain line, it's very hard to stop them when they get that momentum.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think the same with the men and the women. Like, if you don't stop them at the source, basically they're going to make the gain line. And I think their dominance in like set piece as well, I think that is like a big part of their game.
Yeah, I think everyone knows when you play the French, the set piece, as you said, so important to lock that out first, and then maybe first phase if you can stop them and make them harder. But, you know, as you said, they're so big, they can offload, they get on the front foot.
And it's the same. I watched the French women, the second row, I forget her name. She's
Sophie. Is it Sophie?
Yeah. She is a unit when she's moving onto the ball, and they're six or seven as well. She's actually kind of like, she's kind of like your style of player. Actually, she's like a real good ball carrier and stuff, good with the ball in her hands. When they get their tails up, when they get in 30 or 40 metres into line two, they're exactly the same.
Do you find that you have a bigger, do you talk about it more as a team, England, when you play France, just how good they are, the breakdown, how you have to be quicker there, etc.?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think our whole, well, not our whole game plan, but like, we definitely like think more about like the speed of getting to that breakdown, like that sort of stuff, like more, play more territory. those sorts of stuff when we do play France, because we obviously know that they're like massive. Their scrum is so good, and just like playing straight into their forwards is just not a good thing to do. So yeah, just mixing it up and
move them around.
Do you try and move the ball a bit more, maybe, like not necessarily wide, but try and, you know, play out the back of the pod of forwards off the nine or off the 10, just try and keep them guessing, so they, as you said, you're not running back into the whole pack.
Yeah, definitely, like we definitely play out wide, look for territory and those sorts of things when we're playing France. So just yeah, keep them moving. Yeah.
Give the ball to the world player of the year. That's what I say.
Well,
give
agreed.
The ball to her. Let her run.
I will say on the French, two things that impressed me. I think the trust they had in their bench, and to bring on Lukaku, the nine, he to come on for Dupont. Everyone was like, "Blimey, they're taking Dupont off," but he did a really good job in that sense. Brought energy, control, did a great job there. And I thought Aldridge at eight, playing the whole game,
was
brilliant. His engine, decision making, carries, breakdown work was phenomenal. And moving on to the England game, Zoe, who impressed you in that game?
I think Marcus Smith, as ever, he was great in that game. Had loads of flair as usual. It was putting the boys into spaces. I think, like, as soon as he got that try early on, I've knew he was going to be player of the match. I think Max Malins, he was really good. He was coming off his wing a lot of the time. So yeah, he was really impressive too. Alex Donbrandt at number eight, great ball carrying as ever, always. I think it's a very close contest between him and Sam Simmons to start at number eight. They're both very impressive, but yeah, Alex Donbrandt was very good also.
I really liked him at the weekend. I thought he brought just what you want from a number eight, kind of a little bit of hard yards in close. Similar players, to be fair, Simmons, but I thought just he was a little bit more physical and tight, I think, this week.
Would you start him ahead of Simmons?
I probably would Simmons. Now at the minute, the way England are right now. When England developed this running game with like Smith and Marchant and all these boys, Malins coming on the ball, then you want the likes of Simmons out in those wide channels, using his feet, using his pace. But Donbrandt, just at the minute of the weekend, he just got them over the game line a little bit more.
He's certainly someone you can bring on as well, Simmons. You know, like you go Donbrandt early, just, you know, smash him in, get some offloads maybe, and then Simmons comes on. You know, his athleticism, his pace, you know, he's dangerous.
Yeah. And he's always going to bring impact into a game. So
yeah,
exactly. Yeah, he's going to be hard managed when people are getting tired. So that's a really good point, actually.
Yeah.
Because you'd hate to see him in the last 10, 15 minutes of a game when you're starting to truck a little bit. And next minute you have this fellow who's great feet, who's incredibly fast and powerful. So I think that could be the way forward in this campaign, just for them to bring that energy and, as Eddie calls them, the finishers. He's certainly one that can finish off things.
Quick answer, your player of the weekend?
I'm going to go Dupont.
Okay, original world player, yeah, he was very good. I'm going to say slightly different. We spoke about Aldridge. I'm going to go Villiers. I just think I love him. He's a winger who gets involved defensively, worked so hard, obviously knocked Keenan back quite a while, like 10 yards in the touch. I just think he epitomises what's good about the French at the moment, where previous years they haven't been great, is his just hunger to work hard, chase hard, defend,
poach,
get over the ball. And he's
that story about him true, that he has, like, in with the club, with Toulon, he just sits in behind the defensive line to poach?
I mean, I told you that, yeah. So basically what they do is, when the teams get into the 22 against Toulon, he has a free sort of roaming role, license, just go behind the line, and as they're sort of, you know, pick and go in, playing off nine, playing off 10, he can just go into any breakdown. So he just sits behind like a...
For a winger, that's incredible.
Which is amazing.
It's a good idea.
Isn't it? No, it's a great idea. Usually you might have seen it with like Brousseau back in the day, you know, guys who get over the ball, but not your winger, which I love. So
imagine sending you in there. That's what I was thinking about.
I'd get a few turnovers, yeah.
You would not get any turnovers. We've seen a clip a few weeks ago, you trying to turn over a ball.
Bomb shake.
You're like this.
Mate, I don't know how you didn't get a penalty.
your head was like this.
Shawnee,
you're like looking up to see who was
genuinely
going.
Bomb was like, I'm shocked, mate. I have to watch out for you. You're getting good over the ball.
Well, I won't be watching out for you this week.
Yeah, no, you can take my head off.
Exactly.
If I go near a breakdown, I'll lose an eye, you know, my head, everything will come. My ear will be ripped off. I know exactly who it is in a heartbeat. But moving on to to our predictions league. We've just done the second round, and Shawnee, you have slipped down to 152nd place in the league, having had a great start.
Dreadful. I was fifth.
I'm going up in the league, but still a long way behind you.
Where are you?
I am 276th, but flying along. But we have got a shout out to our listener, Stuart Beard, who correctly guessed Wales by 3 and France by 6 this weekend. So he is top of our predictions league. So we've got a rest week next week, and then we're looking forward to round 3. Shawnee, predictions. Scotland versus France. What are you going with?
France by 15.
I will go France by 10. Zoe, what do you think?
I'm going to go France by 9.
Nine, yeah. Oh, nice. I've been Scotland. They're going to be up for it.
This one,
yeah.
There will
Surely
be
why 15? It's a big scoreline.
It's a big scoreline, but I think they will just they're going to overpower Scotland. I think there will be a reaction by Scotland, and I think they'll play better than they did last day. No doubt about it. But this French team will get better as they go through the tournament, and that's the danger.
I agree on principle, but the French are still going away to Scotland. Last time this happened, they got a red card. They lost the game to Scotland. I think the Scottish will have a backlash after what happened in Wales at home. They're going to make it really hard for the French. If as long as they can kind of live with them in the set piece, which is hard enough, then we'll see.
I just think they're the team to beat. That's what I feel at the minute.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on to England-Wales. Shawnee, in England, Twickenham.
Oh, I am going to... This is a big one now.
No, you're not.
I am.
No, you're not.
I am.
All right, call it then.
I'm going to say Wales by 3.
Just so you know, is this because you've had so much abuse from Wales online on your social media, having not picked a Welshman in the Six Nations team in the tournament?
Not
beforehand?
At all. Just as I've said, I think their confidence will have grown after the weekend. They stay in the fight all the time. I don't think England are firing on all cylinders just yet. I don't think the Italian game is going to be give us a good gauge of where they are, really. And yes, they will be fired up for this game. But I just think Wales might nudge this.
I disagree with you.
Of course
you do. I think you're trying to make friends in Wales, and you've done well there.
I've loads of friends in Wales.
You didn't 2 weeks ago. I think England will win just at home, I think. As much as the Welsh get up for the England game more than any other game, I still think it's at home to England. I think the forwards will get on top. I think Marrow will be massive in that game. I think England by 10.
That's bold.
That is bold. But yeah,
10 is bold in those games.
Yeah, I'm going to go England by 10.
All right.
Zoe?
I think it's going to be close, but I do think England are going to win. I'm going to go England by 2.
By 2?
That's more of a real last minute game prediction.
We'll see. And then finally, Ireland versus Italy.
Ireland.
Go for the Italians, yeah?
Ireland by 40.
I will go with, I don't know if I'm too bold here, I'm going to go 45, Ireland. I hope the weather's all right.
5 points more.
Well, it's still quite a lot of points in the international Six Nations fixture. 45, Ireland. Sorry.
I'm going to go something similar. 43.
43.
In between.
Yeah.
Good
like
idea.
That.
Good idea.
Fair enough. Moving on now, we're going to talk to you about your career, Zoe. Let's start. How did you start out in rugby?
So I basically started up in Scarborough when I was 8 years old. Just went down to the local rugby club with my brother. Kind of like how all girls, I think, start their rugby career. But I was so sporty, and I was just swinging on the railings one day, and the coach was like, "Go on, you get involved." So yeah, and they've never really looked back.
And you were the only female on the team at Scarborough at that point, weren't you? What was that like? Was that tough, or did you just not think about it and just crack on?
Yeah, I kind of didn't really think about it, to be honest with you. I think all the boys were like quite actually, like the odd boys that were like a bit awkward about it, but like most of the boys were actually really accommodating to it, and they literally like loved having a girl in the team. And I never really thought too much about it, really. So
were you a bit of a, like, were you always into sport, all sports when you were younger?
Yeah, all sports, like even like ballet, dancing,
everything.
So
you grew up in out in the countryside?
No,
in the
seaside.
Seaside. Oh, lovely. Lovely.
And you played netball as well, didn't you?
Yeah, netball.
What position were you in netball?
Goal defence.
Oh, strong.
Oh, she was.
Yeah.
no one, halt. You're not coming in here today.
Not today.
Not today.
Yeah. I don't think she's a bouncer.
That's why you're a back rower now. Yeah. Did you play any other positions growing up through rugby other than the back row?
Yeah, so I played fullback until I was 18.
Yeah, I was fullback as well. I was fullback.
Every week you become more like Tyro.
That's why I asked the question. Because
every week it's like, did you play football, Sean? Yeah, I was best player in the world, wasn't I? Of course. No. Can you throw milk football? Yeah, I'm basically Tom Brady. I am. Yeah, it's like, it's ridiculous.
What other positions did you play? I played 12, 15.
I played 9, 10 most of the career.
Well, then what are you on about?
No. Well, it's a bit different, Shawnee. You're in the back row and then you're playing 15. I've seen you kick a ball.
15, now she's in the back row. It's exactly the same.
Have you seen her run, Zoe? She's talented. She moves well. I've seen you. You've got one hip.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, come on, mate. And how did you change positions then, out of interest?
I think it was my height more than anything. Yeah, like I remember I had this like one coach who was like, you need to be in the second row, you need to be in the second row. And like all the other coaches were like, don't push her, she wants to be a fullback, blah, 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 all this. And then just started training there.
That moment, was there a little bit of disappointment going from fullback to second row? I mean, I'd be devastated. I'd probably give up rugby straight away. I haven't got the minerals for second row. Shawnee knows that. Yeah, it must have been a bit of disappointment.
It was a bit disappointing, but I kind of made my way forward. So I like played it, and then over in the last couple of years went into the second row, which I actually don't mind now. Like this season, I've actually been playing more in the back row, and I'm like kind of missing the second row a little bit. I'm like, oh, get me back in there, but yeah, which is an odd one. But
yeah, the engine room, I wouldn't like to be in there.
you haven't, really, have you? Have you ever like Simbin had to go and push in there?
I've been there twice in my career.
Injuries?
It like just because someone's gone in, and to be fair, it usually wasn't me because I was probably the shorter back rower. So it was always usually the six or something. So I had to go in there twice, though, I remember. And I was like, never again. Head squeezed off you. Like, don't know where you are afterwards. Your back is hurting you afterwards.
Luckily, you had a scrum cap as well. Otherwise, that would have been... Those ears aren't
my
the best
ears
looking.
Are bad enough anyway.
Yeah, I know. So. You're going to get them sorted when you finish?
No.
Really?
No, they're not that bad.
Adds character. Is that what people say to you?
See me sort.
And so, like, what would you say to any young girl starting out?
I'd just say, like, make sure you enjoy it. I think that's one of like the main sort of things. And also, like we just said, like, don't just play rugby, play all those different types of sports. So then, like, you can decide if you want to go down that route of rugby. But yeah, I'd definitely say just go to your local rugby club, to be honest, and just have a little go, because it's so much fun. I love the contact side of it. I think it's so good. You can just literally go like full pelt into people. But like, I also just love like the social side of it. That's really good. Like, I think the girls are like a really good crack.
Who's the best crack in your team? Apart from yourself, obviously.
I'd say Kelly Smith.
Wild.
Gloucester, she's wild. She's absolutely wild.
Good wild.
Yeah, very funny.
And England, who leads the charge there?
Ooh.
Did you get a chance, like, if you play away in Italy or France, to have a night out afterwards, or is it?
Yeah, at the end of the tournament, we always have a night out. Our last, after our Autumn's International, we obviously, it was like COVID time, so we had to stay in the hotel, but we have like a social group, and they organised a Harry Potter social, and it was actually insane. Like, we had like candles hanging from the ceiling, but yeah, it was really
dress
good.
Up as Harry Potter
dress
characters.
Up as Harry Potter. We're all in different teams, so like all the houses.
Brilliant.
So yeah, it was really good. But yeah, in the England team, I'd say probably someone like Marley Packer or Sarah McKenna. They're very funny.
Good to know.
Very funny.
And just talking about international rugby, 2016, you debut, take it by storm. I mean, you score the winning try against France. Do you think it was easy at that point? You think, I've completed rugby now. It's too easy for me.
No, probably not. But my coach like, came up to me after the game and he was like, if you knew more about rugby, you probably wouldn't have scored that try. I was like, yeah, fair enough.
Cheers.
It was like my first cap. I was like running around like headless chicken. I was just like, just wanted to be on the ball. And yeah, probably if I knew more, I'd probably be in a good position. But
Well, I think it's brilliant, though, that you come into it like that, though, because sometimes players can overthink it. You're just out there doing your own thing that you've done for years now at this stage. The next minute, you're scoring a winning try. I think we've a young fella with us. Tom Pearson is his name. He was calling into England squad last week actually, but he's exactly the same. He's like, you kind of look at him and you go, Tom, do you know what you're doing here? And he goes, I'll just play. And like he's so good. Like yeah. So I like the idea of just people that are like just going off the cuff and doing their own thing on the field. It's quite nice and refreshing too, isn't it? Yeah. They're not like robots.
Well, so structured, eh? It's great that you've got that, you had that attitude, and hopefully it hasn't changed at all. But is there any truth in the rumour that your dad came up for the game and surprised you in that sense?
Yeah, he did. It was literally there. It was because we were in Salt Lake City, and I literally got this message because I had jet lag because we were just getting used to the time differences, and I got this message and it was like, I'm here. And I was like, what the hell is he on about? Like, is he drunk at home or something like that? And it was like, just landed in Salt Lake City. And yeah, him and his best mate came out and watched, which was nice. They were like wearing matching hats. And I was like, oh God.
Sort of embarrassed, but kind of proud. Yeah, but you're like, don't come and talk to me afterwards. Yeah, just I'll meet you later.
Proper supporters.
Yeah, definitely.
And we hear you have a lucky charm as well. Do you want to tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so I have a Johnny Wilkinson knitted doll, which my one of my best friends gran gave to me when I was leaving to college at Hartbury down in Gloucester, and she was like, oh, check this, because we went to watch Johnny Wilkinson in Toulon when he played there, and like I was just like a massive fan like since then. It's actually quite embarrassing now. I hope he never finds out. But
have you met Johnny?
I met him when I went to Toulon that time.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Literally just say hello, got his autograph.
Staring at him in his eyes.
I think we have to get you down to Penny Hill when he's kicking down there and take your doll with you and say, look, Johnny, I just want to get past this.
Properly embarrassed.
This has inspired me through my career. I just want to thank you for that. Yeah. We can put that together, can we? Yeah, everyone? Yeah?
Please no. Yeah. But yeah, to be fair, it's just like a little like good luck charm. I like kind of see it as like, I always think like things change over time. Like, well, like every match day is completely different. Like you have a different kit, like the environment's different, like the different team. And I think like I just have him as like a little constant, and it's just like relaxes me.
Would you have any other superstitions on game day then? Would you, if let's say Johnny Wilkinson wasn't with you on game day, what would happen? What would your thought process be?
Oh gosh.
Do you mean like changing things, like left sock and then right sock? Or?
I always wear my socks down, but I think that's just a fashion thing. But yeah, apart from that, I don't really have any superstitions. I remember Tamara Taylor, she had a superstition. Every time we had shirt presentation, when she got presented a shirt, she'd put it on straight away because she wanted to like connect with her shirt, which I thought was pretty cool. Mm. But yeah, apart from that, I don't really have any superstitions.
You just shoot the breeze. No, I'm kind of
relaxed.
I'm pretty relaxed, yeah. I try to stay as relaxed as possible. I try and be as normal as possible. When I tie my laces is... It's not a superstition, but I'm definitely just like, right, tie the laces, that's it, I'm ready to rock now. Out, let's go. But nothing beforehand, I'd be joking, messing around before a game.
That's the best way to be.
I don't have any superstitions in terms of like leading up to the game. The only one for me is, I don't know why I've become obsessed, I have to be last onto the field now. And
really?
If people are like, I've got a young guy, Ben Earl, who takes ages, like walks and then does this, touches the floor, looks up and everything. And he doesn't get on the field. So I like run down the sideline, off the side of the pitch, and then go on it. Like, I don't know why it's become superstition to me. I've madness, but stuck with it now and a bit worried about changing it, which is odd because I'm pretty relaxed before the game. And suddenly, as you're about to go on, I'm like, best go on last. Like, idiot. But
yeah, that is a bit idiotic.
Yeah, thanks, mate. I appreciate it. And was Johnny your sort of sporting idol or inspiration in that sense?
Yeah, I'd say so. Like, I wouldn't say I really had like a massive one, but probably if I was going to have one, it would have been Johnny Wilkinson. Like I read his book one time and it was just like his dedication was just pretty insane, to be fair.
Easy on the eye too for you.
Yeah. Hey, it's no shame that he's a beautiful man.
He's
a good looking rooster, that.
He's growing old well.
Yeah. Oh, is he getting old? He looks wonderful.
Like a fine
glorious
one,
like might say. And his book's 10 times better than Sean's, but as the reviews probably tell us. Sean, who did you have an idol or someone you looked up to?
I kind of did, yeah. I had Victor Costello, who was a number 8 in Leinster and Ireland.
Was he shot champion as well?
Yeah,
wasn't he?
As well, yeah. He was probably the one there initially when I was actually supporting Leinster.
And did he help you Did you overlap at all, or did he just finished?
I was just coming into the academy, I think, when he was finishing. But I used to clean the senior squad's boots when I first went into the academy. So I probably cleaned his boots at some stage, I'd say. But him, and then there was an Irish player that I used to love watching called Paddy Johns. He was in Ulster second row. Bit dirty, to be fair. But I used to love just watching him because he was so raw, like, and aggressive.
I think he played for Saracens.
Did he actually?
I think he might have done.
Yeah, because he was definitely over here at some point. So they were kind of two lads I used to look up to, I suppose, when I was young, supporting rugby. And then obviously when you get into those setups, you know, you get to know the O'Driscolls and the O'Cullens and O'Connells and these boys, and they kind of take over then. But some good memories.
And so playing in that 2017 World Cup, you know, what was that like for you and the memories you have from that?
Yeah, it was amazing. Like, I didn't actually think I was going to go because there was a tour to New Zealand just before, and I didn't actually get selected to go there, which I was like absolutely gutted about. And then they had an injury there, so then when the tour got announced, I was going, so I was literally just absolutely buzzing and just like made the most of every moment being there, really. But yeah, it was really cool to be out there.
And obviously disappointing at the end. Now, what was that like in the changing room?
Yeah.
The whole team must have been so disappointed, obviously.
Yeah, it was really disappointing because I think every single person like believed we were actually going to win it. We'd like built our whole year up, obviously, as everyone does, but like there was just no other option than to win. And I think it was just like, oh my God, like, I think it would hit a couple of the girls like pretty hard. Obviously, it was quite early in my career.
Do you think those learnings, or do you think those like games have taught you a lot over the past couple of seasons? Like, do you think as a group, you've obviously got very, very strong now. So have you taken bits and pieces from those tournaments, do you reckon?
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of what we have improved is like our psychology side of things and like pressure. Like, we train, it's called like PPP, it's called like physical pressure practice, and we train under those real high pressure moments, because I think that was like a big thing in that 2017. We had like, we were fit enough, we had the game plan, but like the pressure just like got on top of us, which I think is a massive thing in those big tournaments. So that's one thing that we're really working on at the moment, is that the psychology side of things and being able to make those decisions under those key decisions under like high pressure.
And Zoe, who are those key leaders in the team for England?
So there's obviously Sarah Hunter. She's like an amazing leader. Like, she's so calm, like keeps her head all the time. And then you've got like the people who are direct, like Abby Ward. She's an unbelievable leader. Like, she's like very more like direct, that sort of thing. And then you've got Packe, who will like jeer us up, that sort of thing. Like, she's really crucial to have on the pitch also.
And you were made captain against USA. How proud was that a day for you and your family?
Yeah, it was so proud. Honestly, I did not see it coming at all. I literally got a call from Mids and he was like, "Will you come down to the foyer?" And I was literally out of the hotel at the time. So I was like, "Oh my God, I'm on my way back now." I thought I was going to get told off or whatever. But no, yeah. Yes, we thought it was your captain. Yeah. So yeah, it was pretty cool.
And you know, it's been an amazing year for you. It's an amazing year for the Roses, number one team. You know, how important is it that to continue to make the game grow and like help women's rugby grow as much as possible?
Yeah, definitely. That's like, we had a meeting the other day and it was like, we're kind of like the trailblazers for the future of women's rugby. So it's like amazing to see young girls now and the amount that the sport is growing over the last couple of years. It's been amazing to see, and hopefully it'll just keep growing and growing, and hopefully we can be the role models for those younger girls.
Yeah, the club scene, I think, over here, like, and I'm not comparing it to Ireland, but the club scene over here is so strong now. And obviously your success as an England group is incredible, what you've done now in the last 2 years. And like, success will breed success. So I think like it'll only get stronger now. There's more girls going to get into women's rugby. There's going to be more participating every year. There's a real good feel factor, I think, about women's rugby in over here in the UK at the minute. And if they can maintain that and keep, you know, I suppose, improving like club setups, improve coaches, more players being brought into the game, it's only going to get stronger and stronger. And, you know, you're right. I think you are going to be, you know, the template for those younger crew coming along behind you. But I think it's taken a long time to get where you are now, and other people need to catch up. it's a lot of credit has to go to you as a group and England Rugby in general for putting all the right structures in place, and now they're starting to see the fruits of it. The women's game, I've said it for years at home, does not get the credit it deserves. Over here, it's starting to get it now, but in other, I say Ireland, Wales, Scotland, they need to follow this template that England have shown the way now and get with the programme, or they're just going to be left behind because the professional game over here now is so strong.
Yeah, I think that's a big one for us, like Red Roses as well. I think it's really important that other nations start investing into their women's teams, because we can only get so far being professional, not against other professional teams. Like, we need those guys to professionalise their teams for us to keep on improving.
Yeah, as well, yeah.
And I guess, you know, with that comes more pressure for the England team, you know, number one ranked team. You've won the last three tournaments in the Six Nations. How do you as a team deal with that pressure? And obviously yourself being world player, how do you deal with that pressure individually, I guess?
You just go with the flow, don't you?
Yeah. Just give me the ball and I'll run. I'll beat everyone.
Yeah.
I think, like, it's just about... Like, I know it's really, like, cliche to say, but I think it's literally just about keeping our eyes on, like, what's in front of us. And just, like, I think for me as well, like, I don't even think about being, like, world player. I literally just, like, just keep focusing, because it, like, just keeps me calm and that sort of thing. So I think it's just, like, keeping your eyes on, like, the next job rather than making it a big thing. Like, I think that was one of the things that we said in the autumns. We wanted to just concentrate on the process, like, each individual game. Like, we wouldn't even speak about the next following games going into the other weeks. And I think it was just about just getting that job done, yeah. Put it to bed, move on. Mm-hmm. I know it's really cliche to say, but like I think that has
it's working for you. Yeah, exactly.
But do you think as well, like, you're seeing how much depth there is in England squad in the autumn and how many players play, do you think that's a big reason for the success, is that the competition for places is so high, everyone is trying to, you know, compete to get their position, that it drags everyone up to make sure they're eating the right way, training the right way, pushing the standards day in, day out?
Yeah, definitely. Like, the competition in England now is absolutely unreal. Like, the likes of, like, Poppy Clear, like basically our whole squad is, like, really strong, and like the depth that we have as well, and even the youngsters coming through. So I think, like, each day or each training session when we're in camp, we try and push each other, and it's really important that we start getting, like, the off-field stuff right correct now, which is probably something that we haven't had previously in the women's game, but now as each person's getting better and better, then that's really important to get those off-field kind of stuff going.
And the World Cup's been delayed a year, but it'll be happening in the autumn in New Zealand. You must be so excited for that. The way the team's playing, the way you're playing, you must want to play the tournament right now, pretty much.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I mean, it's a long road ahead, but it's so exciting.
Who do you think are going to be the teams to really, like, compete with you this in that World Cup?
France is definitely going to be up there. Like, this Six Nations, I think it'll give us both, like, a key indicator to, like, see where both teams are at, really. But I think they are... It's literally, like, whenever we play each other, we're not sure, like, who's going to come out on top. And so I think France will be really key. I think now that New Zealand have got their full-time contracts, I think we'll see a big jump in their progression as well. So, yeah,
France and New Zealand, yeah, those are the two. They'd be my two as well, to be fair, if you look at them.
Anyways, it's Shaunie's favourite time of the week. It's time for Good Week, Bad Week. This week's Good Week goes to Gloucester Rugby. They did a special Valentine's Day naked calendar. As we can see from the pictures, they were raising money for the Gloucester Rugby Foundation. Obviously, special mention here to Billy 12 Trees, Lewis Ludlow and Charlie Chapman. So it's a good effort. There's also a few images of the lads working on their line out here. Now, I don't know if that's a very good filter. There's a hell of a tan on the guy nearest to us.
Is he covered in oil too, is he?
Yeah, I mean, Tom Seabrook, I've seen him before. He's definitely
shiny.
Not that
shiny.
Very shiny, and he's got a hell of a tan. He's either been on the sunbeds or, you know, they're helping him out there. And moving on, we've got Fraser Balmain as well here. I mean... Tooled up, is that? looks like great. He's doing an advert for Screwfix, isn't it?
Lump hammer.
I know, and he looks got a bit of eyeshadow on. I mean, fantastic. You know, rugby takes all shapes and sizes. Fraser's a top boy as well, so fair play. But the calendars have been produced and donated by Big Doug and are available to purchase online for $10.99. All proceeds go to Gloucester Rugby Foundation.
And you've ordered 10 of them.
Well, yeah, actually 20. Mrs. wanted more. Shawnee, who's going in the sin bin this week?
The sin bin this week is going to Mornay Stain for...
What's he done, Sean?
Well, he's had a massive high tackle.
Kind
of swing and arm high tackle after 11 minutes only. It was a bit of a cheap shot.
I think you put a clip up the other day saying a massive cheap shot. So yes. this is definitely cheap.
That's another cheap shot.
I will say, that's a bit unlike Mornay Stain. I mean, yeah, he must be 38 or so. I don't know what Lekenya Am's done to him in box training camp, but he's passable a long time before, and he's absolutely wellied him there.
And then Am went on to score an unbelievable try later in the game as well.
Well, that's all we've got time for. Zoe, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure, and we wish you all the best for the Six Nations. Shawnee, happy birthday. You can find us on Joe YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcast from. This has been the House of Rugby, brought to you by Joe.
You've been listening to the House of Rugby on Joe.